Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 6, and it's the Big Trombones, Episode 76, leading the parade as we march into the offseason now with a couple days to digest this Steelers loss. We had the Mike Tomlin press conference today. Dave, we had some interesting articles out there. Some thoughts on Le'Veon Bell, some thoughts on the Steelers. We got our first national story on the Steelers mismanaging the cap, which we will get one every 2 days for the rest of the offseason. And so we got plenty to talk about.
Yeah, we do have a lot to fit in this first hour, and I guess we should probably start with kind of wrapping up kind of our final thoughts on what happened Sunday in Denver with the Steelers' loss. Now, I'm not sure if you've seen it, David. I went back through, you asked me to grade Ben Roethlisberger's performance the other day. What did I say, B minus,
yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
Maybe it really needed to be an A minus when you go back and look at the throws. What I did is I went back and looked at and took still a watch. Each individual incompletion, there were 13 of them. Of course, one of them was a spike. So you got to throw that one out. But I looked at the other 12, David, and have stills of all those, and kind of wanted to run them down with you real quick. The first one, of course, was the incomplete pass, the first play of the game, deep down the left side to Marcus Wheaton. And to be quite honest with you, I am not concerned whether or not, I mean, you'd like that pass to be completed, but in my opinion, I think you said this the other day as well, too, I liked him showcasing that arm on the first play to gain a little bit of respect. The second incompletion was that pass at 8:50 left in the first quarter over the middle to Martavis Bryant that hit him right in the hand.
Well, yeah, and by the way, I haven't seen the All-22 yet, but my goodness, he absolutely broke Aqib Talib's ankles on that. Aqib Talib took two steps and then spun to the outside. Bryant cut to the inside, and it was going to be off to the races.
Yeah, more than anything, it was 2nd and 9. He was going to have that first down.
Oh, no doubt.
Let's see here. Moving on, the third incompletion was actually that 4th and 1 play, David. The deep ball to Marcus Wheaton after Ben saw that Jesse James was covered out in the left flat. You look at that thing. Look, I know Talib was right there contesting the throw, had hands kind of up in the face of Wheaton. But you know what? If you're going to be a good wide receiver in this league and you expect to make the big money, you got to make that catch. And if you watch the replay of that, that thing hit Wheaton right in the chest.
He should have caught it. Ben said he should have caught it yesterday. We just come back to this. And look, it's being an analyst talking about this stuff. Is it an easy catch? No. Isn't it, but what we saw here, and it kind of magnified itself in the second half of the season, is the Steelers receivers have to make the hard contested catches if they want to be elite, and they didn't make the non-Antonio Brown Steelers receivers did not make enough of them.
You're exactly right. And the next two incompletions in that game, both of which happened in the first quarter, I think they were two plays apart, somewhere around 5:21 left in the first quarter, was that Roethlisberger incomplete throw out to the right to Martavis Bryant. And if you look at Ben Roethlisberger's reaction on the play, looked like he expected Martavis to break to the outside. So obviously some miscommunication there. Two plays later, he tried to hit Sammy Coates over the middle on a 3rd and 9 play. The ball was behind Sammy Coates. But if you watch Roethlisberger's reaction after the play, he expected, Sammy Coates to sharpen that coming out of the break.
Yeah, that was, that really looked like a bad throw, but I'm kind of with you. He didn't run a clean line, and you probably want to come back to the ball a little bit, and he kind of ran more toward the end, the goal line.
Sort of drifted,
yeah,
what they call
right.
Drifted.
That, right, that's the right word. it. Thanks.
Let's see. Moving on from that, a 3rd-and-13 throw from the Denver 25-yard line with 10:31 in the second quarter was the incomplete short middle to Heath Miller. That's a ball that Heath probably catches, 90 times out of 100.
That was the great throw, right? I mean, he put it to the right of Heath and right waist high. I mean, it was a great throw.
Right.
Is that the one?
You're exactly right. Right over the middle, in between the hash marks.
Yeah.
With that one. The very next incomplete throw was Roethlisberger's first pass of the second half. Now, this was a bad throw. You'll remember this. That was that screen to the left to Martavis Bryant where he was high and upfield with it to Martavis Bryant. So that was obviously a tough catch, but, you know, I got a great still of it. It goes right between, even though Martavis is up high up in the air, it went right between his hands. But we'll chalk that up as a bad throw on Roethlisberger. The next incompletion was two plays after that. That missed screen to Bryant. Once again, the ball hits Heath Miller right in the chest. Now, he's a little bit contested there by linebacker Brandon Marshall, but the ball did hit Heath Miller right in the chest. That was a 1st-and-10 play from the Denver 27 with 10:59 left in the third quarter. Let's see here. Moving on quickly through these. The pass incomplete to the short left. Once again, inside Bronco territory here. 10:29 left in the third quarter. 1st-and-10 at the Denver 15. That's that throw. The screen again to Martavis Bryant where it looks like Marcus Wheaton. I think Chris Harris Jr. just read the play good and made a great break on the football. Martavis Bryant was not able to seal, Marcus Wheaton was not able to seal him off. That one went for an incompletion. The next incompletion was that throw to the end zone to Martavis Bryant with a Tlaib all over him. Call that what you will. Probably should have been pass interference, if you ask me, on Tlaib. And then the final two incompletions in the game was the Roethlisberger pass incomplete that was behind Marcus Wheaton with 14:23 left in the fourth quarter there. Ben acts like he expected Marcus Wheaton to sit down in the zone instead of kind of continuing and drifting on in his route. We'll go ahead and charge Roethlisberger with a bad throw there. And then the final incompletion happened with 2 minutes left in the game, 3rd-and-5 from the Steelers 43. That was the pass that was behind Martavis Bryant short and over the middle there. But in Roethlisberger's defense, DeMarcus Ware did, you know, have some pressure on there, and really, if you look at the replay, he actually hit Roethlisberger with his hand in the back of the quarterback's helmet there. And I don't know, I thought that was against the rules, but obviously that forced a bad throw. So when you look at all 12 of these incompletions, David, I thought Roethlisberger played a good game, and as you said, you expect your wide receivers to step up and make key catches, tight ends too, and they didn't get enough. They didn't make enough plays when the team really needed them to.
Yep, and good work on going through all of that. That's insightful stuff. You know, they had to get in the end zone and they didn't make enough plays. And I'll go back to the press conference was interesting today because Mike was reasonably forthcoming about stuff. He didn't want to get too in-depth in player evaluations. The offseason's 2-3 days old. I understand all that. So, we could have sat there at the press conference and asked about every individual player. He didn't talk much about the game. And look, are we going to ask him why he didn't kick the field goal? The answer is, at that moment in time, I thought our best alternative was to punt. That's what his answer is going to be. Or he's going to say the wind was swirling enough that, I didn't think it was appropriate there at that point in the game. Our defense had, done a great job. We wanted to pin him. Okay, that didn't work out. But one of the things I would like to know and talk to kind of Richard Mann about or somebody is how do you teach running in open space? And I don't know that you can because every situation's different and you've got to look at angles and you got to make split-second decisions. And, we've seen Antonio Brown at times make terrible decisions on punt returns or in open space when he's running with the football and he's as good as anybody in the game at doing it. But I'll look at all three of those One catch by all three of those guys. Sammy Coates down the right sideline, DHB for sure, and Martavis Bryant on one of his kind of forays through the Denver secondary. And say, on every one of those, I thought there was a moment when I watched it live where I thought he should score.
And that's fair.
And so I don't know if, you know, I'm being too hard on him or that his guys didn't make a right cut. And I, you know, look, this
the other team's paid to make plays,
yeah,
too,
and
though.
This is where we are, you know, look, we say a lot of things, and I think we have some decent insights, but this is where I'm completely out of my depth in terms of kind of, you know, how difficult is it to see that type of stuff. Look, we all played, you know, we all ran around when we were kids and played dodgeball or smear the queer or whatever you played. So, you know, I played soccer, so I ran through defenses, and I have a sense of what that's like, but look, I have no idea whether I'm being fair to those guys or not, but I, you know, certainly Darius Hayward Bay, I'll take that one. You know, I think that's a layup. I think he just either should have cut hard back to the pylon, or he should have gone to the other pylon, and he kind of went halfway in between, and Roby made a good play.
Even on that one that Martavis Bryant failed to cut back on, right?
Yeah.
Was that a pass or an indirect?
Third and two.
Yeah. I mean, wide open if he cuts back.
Yeah, one guy filling the slot there who then went outside, and you know he would have had. Look, I don't know that he goes for 20 yards, but he's got kind of one guy, and obviously he's running back into the middle of the field, so he's probably not going for 20 yards. But the point is, on third and two, you've got to get the first down. The thing that was so bad about that is he stood there for seemed like eternity, kind of trying to make a decision. And at that point, it's not just the guy you're trying to beat on the outside with the Roethlisberger block. Everybody else involved in the defense has had time to kind of flow to the play, and they're all recovering if they were going the other way. So that he was just not decisive there. That was a bad decision.
An outside zone running back, he is not. anything else you want to wrap up on this game? Look, I mean, the defense just didn't make plays down there in the crunch time when they really needed them to. The fumble obviously was a big part of that game, and the Steelers going 1-for-3 in the red zone was a big part of that game. Say what you will about Tomlin not kicking the field goals. The field goals in those two fourth down opportunities, I think that's pretty much it in a nutshell, right? I mean, offensive line played fairly well overall, I think. The receivers, the backs, I thought, played well, except for the Toussaint fumble. I just think the eligibles, as we like to call them, didn't answer the bell with Antonio Brown out. If Antonio plays in that game, the Steelers win.
You know, I've heard a lot of people say that. It gives them a better chance to win, for sure. I mean, look, the fact that Chris Harris got hurt is something that we didn't talk about much, and we probably should have talked about more. They still have two great corners, but that's a factor. And you just, you know, you throw an elite, the best receiver out there, add him to the mix. The Steelers have good receivers. The other guys are good, and Sammy Coates contributed. So, you know, maybe we don't get the Sammy Coates contribution, but yeah, the Steelers have a better chance of winning, and it was a damn close game. So yeah, maybe that tilts it the Steelers' way.
If it's and nuts were candies and butts, right?
Okay. So.
Let's see. Let's move on to talk a little bit about what Mike Tomlin said today, and really started off. The major thing was running down all the injured players and who's going to have what done to them during the offseason. He pretty much opened up. He nipped you in the bud right away, as Andy Griffin likes to say. Marquise Pouncey in that ankle is doing well in his recovery from that injury suffered during the preseason, according to Mike Tomlin. However, he did later on reveal during his press conference that he never really had a serious discussion about Pouncey playing this season. That's probably not surprising due to all the photos that have shown up on social media, and it looked like he's still getting some, as Melanie likes to say, some bug juice in that ankle. So I don't know if we're ever going to get the full story on Marquise Pouncey and how infected that ankle was and what went wrong after surgery, this, that, and the other. But Mike seems to think that he's doing well.
He basically said everybody's doing well. I mean, literally, yeah. every hurt guy said doing good, doing well, doing well. I mean, it literally listed, what, 10 guys.
Yeah, and that's like every surgery is successful, right?
Yeah, guy didn't die.
Yeah, so I guess it is. We're all day-to-day anyway. But as far as the other guys that had off-season surgeries, who he was referring to, Le'Veon Bell with the knee, Sean Swisham with the knee, cornerback Cinquez Goldson with the shoulder, tackle Kelvin Beachum with the knee, Roosevelt Nix fullback foot, and cornerback Cortez Allen knee. Several players who ended the season with minor injuries who will need procedures coming up very soon, according to Tomlin. Mike Mitchell, left shoulder. Kicker Jordan Berry, right shoulder. Linebacker Ryan Shazier, knee. Tight end Matt Spaeth, knee. Guard David DeCastro, ankle. Tackle Marcus Gilbert, ankle. Tomlin indicated that Mitchell and Berry will need about 4 months of rehab time, and kind of the other guys are weeks as far as time frame goes. He did add that D'Angelo Williams with that foot will not need surgery. So, you know, there's some good news there. And did I miss anything with the injuries? I think I got them all there.
Oh, yeah. It's a long injury list, but we have no reason to believe that anybody is not going to be ready for, you know, the 9 months from now. So let's just put it that way. Nobody just tore their ACL, or nobody had a severe injury in the last couple of weeks. It would appear, you know, with Ben not needing surgery, that, you know, it is what it is. I mean, you know, Mike Mitchell's had a couple tough seasons. That shoulder injury has been at least half the second half of the season that's been bothering him. With the groin injuries he had last year, he's had a rough go for a bit. I'd like to, Dave, I can't remember if it was you or Alex who put up the special team stuff, but, you know, we talked about it. I mentioned it on the first punt return, and I saw a nice still on Steelers Depot about the contain of Spaeth on the outside, and Steelers maybe missing Rosie Nix there for that.
Yeah, they did. Boy, you know, in addition to him being a hell of a fullback, he sure is a good special teams player. And all you need to do is look at the film from this past season to see the kind of impacts, that he made. And I think Danny Smith said it a couple weeks ago. He misses the hell out of Rosie Nix. I think that was his direct quote as far as that goes. So they lost him, what, week 17, in the game against the Browns to that fifth metatarsal, and he has since had that repaired, but in fact, I guess we should go ahead and use this time. Several of these guys have already, Nix and Chris Hubbard, were set to be exclusive rights free agents. Both of those guys have already been re-signed to one-year deals for the minimum since the injury, since the season ended. Boy, 9 of the 10 practice squad guys were signed to reserve futures contracts as well. There's no surprise there. The only one that hasn't signed a futures deal that was on the practice squad was Tyler Murphy. And I'm willing to bet he was offered a futures deal. He just is probably taking a little look around the league to see where else maybe he can land. So not overly surprising there. Let's see, who was the other one? The Pitt safety.
Ray Vinnipal.
Yeah, they signed him to a reserve futures deal. They brought him in, I think, for a workout a week and a half ago or something like that. So that should catch up everybody on injuries and transactions as of right now.
Okay, and now in terms of the other stuff from the press conference that caught your attention, we talked about his coaching staff. He'd like them all back, and I asked him if any other team – had contacted him asking permission to speak to any of the coaches, and the answer was no. So, you know, every year it seems a guy leaves, but it's not visible to me who would be, you know, unless, you know, somebody retires, John Daniels or, John Mitchell. Those guys are a little bit older, in their 60s. I guess Richard Mann's relatively old too. But I don't see anybody getting dismissed from the staff.
No, I think maybe you might worry a little bit about Sean Sarrett, the offensive assistant, maybe getting a head coaching job. I mean, not head coach, offensive line coach position, but he might still be a year or two away from that. So I'm with you. If there is any turnover, we'll know within the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Right. other things that jumped out.
Cortez Allen comments.
Yeah, very interesting. He got asked, Mike got asked if he expects, the phrasing was a little bit interesting. He got asked if you know, Cortez Allen is in the plans and whether he thinks he can still be an impact player. And Mike just flat out said no. The answer to the question was, are you confident he can be an impact player? And the answer was no. You know, I don't know. And he didn't kind of expound on it too much, but he certainly didn't give him a ringing endorsement.
No, he did not. He said, I'm not. We'll see. That's the ultimate challenge there, for sure. And look, I mean, we're not telling anybody anything new here. Cortez Allen played one game in 2015, just really a handful. I mean, last season as well. Since signing that long-term extension of his, is the knee a chronic thing? Well, he seemed to say that his rehab or all the players' rehabs are going fine. So one would think that, you know, the knee's not a long-term issue, hopefully. The thing with him, and I know everybody's ready to cut him. I understand that.
For those purposes, Dave, it's pre-June 1. It's a 4.05 dead money. Is that right? I think that's right. So,
phrase it again.
If they cut him pre June 1, I think the dead money that they carry would be against the cap be just over $4 million.
Let me give you the exact numbers.
4.05, I think, is the exact number.
With Cortez Allen, he's scheduled to earn $4.4 million base salary. So if you and he's also got something else in there as well too. But I mean, long and short of it, if you cut him, you save $1.7 million.
Yep. Yes, that's it. And his cap number is 5.75, so it's 4.05 of dead money.
Right.
So Dave,
now,
explain to everybody and explain to me. Remind me, what would so that's pre June 1. What would it be post June 1?
You save his base salary, $4.4 million.
Okay. Well, again, you and I talked about this when it happened. I'll still go with, why wouldn't you bring him to camp?
Exactly. Barring that knee,
barring the knee, or the fact that in the middle of the season they said, we just don't want to have anything to do with this guy going forward. We're done.
Yeah, you know, maybe his attitude's bad or something like that. But I mean, he's really a soft spoken guy. He doesn't. I don't know. I've never have talked to him, but he just doesn't seem like that kind
of
guy.
To the Citadel. You know, you don't have many guys like that. You know, you go to the Citadel. You know how to group.
And when you look at the list of free agents and the guys that are under contract, cornerback and all like that, it just makes too much sense to bring him to camp and give him one last opportunity to win a starting job. Now, if he can't win the starting job during training camp and the preseason, you know, then you look at saving that $4.4 million in cap space this year. Now, obviously, there'll be a little bit of, there'll be some dead money tacked on to that for 2017. But it makes too much sense. You know, I mean, really, what are you going to do with that one point something in cap space by cutting them, you know, pre June 1st?
Yeah, like I said, if it's not an organizational thing where they say, look, we just want to mentally move on, we want to give him an opportunity to move on, we're done with it, then, you know, you would think bringing it back the move they should make.
And then, you know, people will want to look at that hard pre-June number of $1.7 million in cap space saved. You got to always take into account displacement cost on the top 50, what they call a rule of 51 as well, too. So even if it's a rookie that comes up into the top 51 salaries, and let's say he earns a 500-something thousand base salary, you're really only saving just over $1 million for a player that you know you might need, and who knows, maybe he can make it back. Am I confident he will win the starting job next year? Absolutely not. I think Mike Tomlin said it best today. He's not either. So, but I think it just makes too much sense to carry him on into training camp and take one last stab at him.
Okay. There were lots of warm and fuzzy from Mike today. Talking about the fan base and the people in the building and that kind of stuff, emphasizing the work they have to do for the draft and free agency, how much time he and Kevin Colbert will spend together over the next couple months going through that process. Said it's a big offseason for everybody, and it is. Obviously, it's that, you know, for all players, we might think for some more than others, and that's probably the case. But the one funny line was he got asked how his exit interview with James Harrison went, and he paused for a second and said, "Do you think I had an exit interview with James Harrison?" And he said, "Coach." And I said, "James."
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, not much of an exit interview there. And it'd be interesting to see what James said after the game, and I believe Monday in the locker room as well.
Which was different than what he said a month ago, by the way.
Refresh my memory.
Well, a month ago he said, he plans on playing. He had definitely said he planned on coming back, and we talked about it at the time. And so we were a little surprised. I was a little surprised that he was not a little bit more definitive about, wanting to come back.
Yeah, and boy, what a bargain he would be, too. The thing is it takes up a roster spot in the process. And at realistically, at this point of his career, what do you expect from a guy like James Harrison? You probably expect him to miss a game or two at the least. I mean, he's not a double-digit sack guy anymore. I mean, five, six, maybe if you're lucky. I mean, he sure got fat late in that Indy game with some of those sacks too, right? When the game was out of hand. So it would not be surprising. Look, even if James wants to return, who's to say that Steelers want him back even at that low number?
Yeah, I kind of again.
He can't. He's not going to play special teams for you.
No, of course not. And it really might come down to who do you like better, James Harrison or Anthony Ciccolo?
True.
Because, how many outside backers do you want to carry? If Ciccolo has a future and you think he's a player and obviously he can play special teams, if you're going to carry four outside guys, and that's just assuming, no one new is going to come into the mix. I don't see him cutting Arthur Motes. I'm more convinced than ever they will pick up Jarvis Jones' option. So Jones, Motes, Dupree, you got three. Ciccolo's not going anywhere. I'd be surprised if you wouldn't rule it out, but I'd be surprised if they cut him. So you're like you said, they're taking up roster spots. Maybe you could carry nine linebackers. I don't think Sean Spence will be back. So you know who three of your inside guys are. So, maybe you just had one inside guy and you go with nine linebackers, that's fine. But, those are obviously the things they got to think about.
Absolutely. And, will James be willing to put his body back through that again he shouldn't need the money at this point. It would all be about the love of playing and wanting to get another Super Bowl at this point. So just one of the several things that we'll have to monitor over the course of the offseason. And I would think, wouldn't you think that by the start of the new league year, we should know whether or not, or do you think it drifts on in past the draft as far as what happens with James Harrison? It's not like you don't have to be in a hurry to cut him to save that 1.25 million in cap space.
I'm guessing.
But you would think he would let the team know by the start of the new league year whether or not he's going to want to return.
I'm guessing no. I'm guessing we won't have an answer until later.
I'm willing to bet we do.
All right.
Mark me down, Alan. Mark me down for thinking we'll have a decision on James Harrison by the start of new league year. Who knows? But like I said, you're only talking about $1.25 million. So, who cares if it takes them all offseason to decide?
Okay. So, other things from the press conference.
Cinquez Goldson, challenged him a little bit. He expects him to perform like a second year guy in 2016, not because he's played, because he's been around the team. And Tomlin went on to say it's no different from anybody else that sustains an injury during their rookie year. He's been very upfront about what he expects from him. He expects him to come back and perform like a guy that's been a part of the team. Sure, he hasn't played, but he's been a part of the team, Tomlin said. So, he said it gave him a chance this year to grow from a football intellect standpoint, and all those things should show up in his play as we get into 2016. And boy, they sure going to need him.
They sure hope, you sure hope that he steps in and into the Brandon Boykin role at worst.
At worst.
I don't want to suggest that there's no way he can play outside. You know, maybe he can. He's look. If he weren't 5'8", he would have gone higher than he went. He would have been a first round pick. So he's 5'8", went in the second round, and we'll see what we have when in July, really, August, really, is when we're going to know anything more. So down the road,
with a team that's missed on so many cornerbacks over the years during the draft, they certainly can't afford to miss on this one.
Dave, there's been some suggestion, and it didn't really cross my mind. And if you had asked me when they did the original contract extension with Heath, I think I was on record as saying he won't make it 3 years, you know, one or two. He's made two. Is there any chance the Steelers move on from Heath Miller? I can't see him retiring. And, look, they're not dynamic at the tight end position. Spaeth is just a blocker. Jesse James is a young guy who did some nice things, and he's not a great blocker. Heath is, you know, a step slower, and that, you know, just comes with being 32. Is there any chance Heath Miller's not on the team next year?
Sure, there's a chance. Would I bet my house? Probably not. Because I mean, look at his age.
Give me percentages.
I say he has a 85% chance of being back on this team.
Yeah, I'm right with you. That's exactly where I put it.
And people want to say, well, just cut him for, you know, say $4 million. Well, you got to replace him. And look, you know who's not, you know, who has a lower chance of returning next year, even though he's under contract, is Matt Spaeth. Even though he's only set to earn something like $1 million.
Well, if they go to the draft, Matt Spaeth's in trouble. And you know, look, you have Blanche Flower, who's been on. I think he's still in the organization. I can't even remember. But let me ask you this, Dave: if the kid from Ole Miss, Hunter, what's his name?
You mean Arkansas?
Arkansas, Hunter.
Heath
Hunter or Hunter, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah. So I know who you're talking. Hunter Henry.
He's the presumptive number one tight end. Maybe there's somebody else. If the number one tight end in the draft is on the board when the Steelers pick, would you even consider, you know, look, they took Heath, what, 30th the year he came out, 30th or 31st, 30th, I think. Would you consider tight end if there is an elite prospect there, if a Tyler Eifert type of guy?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think you have to subscribe to the best player available, and let's face it, we still don't know what Jesse James is. Jesse James more Matt Spaeth, or is Jesse James more Heath Miller? We don't know right now.
Yeah,
I'll tell you this.
And your bet is exactly what mine is, right? He's right in between them.
Right in between them, right. And the thing is, he needs a lot of work on that blocking.
Yeah.
You know, he needs a lot of work as a pass catcher and a route runner as well, too. So I don't think look, he went in the fifth round for a reason, right? And yes,
he's
6'7",
and you know, he can run a little bit. So, you know, again, it tells you guys have flaws. Doesn't mean they can't overcome them or get better at their weaknesses. But that's why, you know, Golson's flaw, he can't overcome. He's 5'8". Can't change that.
Can you imagine the outrage if they took a tight end with their first round pick after taking Jesse James? But I mean, I think it comes down to what, and you know, even though we've got some tape on Jesse James this year, I'm not sure it's enough for us to draw any hard conclusions, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they see the guy in practice. They know more what to look. And in fact, I think he might be more Matt Spaeth than he is Heath Miller. And that's assuming he can get this blocking down, you know. So it will definitely – but look, it's a nice red zone target. I'll give him that. I mean, really can be a valuable option, talking about Jesse James in the red zone. Well, we'll have to see. Would I be – I guess what you're saying is, would I be shocked if they took a tight end in round one, if it is the number one tight end prospect? Probably not, as we sit here today. But, boy, do I have a lot of tape to watch.
Yeah, okay. So I'm trying to think if there was anything else in the press conference that stood out.
Asked about, you know, Cameron Hayward made some remarks the other day about how he would like him and Tua to have a little bit more of alleviate some of their snaps via rotation more next season. And Mike Tomlin said, point blank, if I had guys in there I could give snaps to, I would. So, I mean, that kind of lets you know what they think about Cam Thomas. You know, even Danny McCullers didn't play a lot of snaps.
You want to bet on a guy coming back who's a veteran who won't be on the team. Danny McCullers obviously made zero progress. I think I mentioned this on Monday. There are zero guarantees that he's back. I mean, I'd put it 50-50 at best.
Yeah, but if you don't bring him back, who's your backup nose tackle?
Oh, right, you got to find him. You know, they got look, to go on the D-line.
And you don't even have a starting one right now until they sign. I think they absolutely have to re-sign Steve McClendon. Do you agree?
Anything under kind of anything in the range of $4 million a year or under is a no-brainer.
And the good thing is base 3-4 nose tackles. I don't want to say they're a dying.
Yeah, they're not in high demand.
They're just because of the amount of snaps they play, they don't get paid the big bucks either. So William Gay, you talk about two free agents on unrestricted free agents on the defensive side of the ball. I'd really like to see back William Gay and Steve McClendon certainly lead the list, and Robert Golden probably not too far behind when it comes to him being a free agent as well too. So you're right. Do not write Daniel McCullers' name down in pen as being part of this 2016 roster. There's a good chance, yes, but I've kind of had my questions about him all along, and I've taken a lot of heat about him as well too. But hopefully he has a great offseason and can be a bigger contributor. He might have to. They don't re-sign Steve McClendon and go out and sign somebody else to be a base 3-4 nose tackle. They might be forced to kind of make him be the guy. But like I said, I wouldn't write his name down in pen just yet.
Yeah. Okay.
How many total? Sorry, I forgot to look. How many? He didn't play
one snap.
Less. But I'm talking about for the season with him.
Oh, I'll bet he didn't play 10% of the snaps.
Keep talking. I'll let you know here real quick.
Well, I want all our listeners to know that I'm like a dog with a deer right out in the front yard right now because Chip Kelly's news conference is on television. I'm upon the window.
You're straining your neck right now.
Yeah, pawn the window.
Let's see. Let me pull
Chip
these up.
Had a couple funny lines here so far already. Said he's still performing an autopsy of what went wrong in Philadelphia.
Yeah, probably needs a frontal lobotomy.
Good choice of words.
Let's see. 105 defensive snaps for Daniel McCullers, and that was 9.5% of all total snaps. So now that includes the playoffs.
Just I made it by a hair, under 10%.
Yeah, I right at 100, right at 100, just a little over 100 defensive snaps there, and he only gave you 13. You would think someone with his size, you'd have out on that field goal blocking unit as well too, right?
Yeah.
13 special team snaps for him.
Yeah, his career is in jeopardy.
All right, now we'll have time to recap more of this presser, and boy, we got nothing but time on our hands. But there's two articles that I know we want to get to, right?
Yeah, let's start with the article by Mike DeCourcy yesterday in the Sporting News. Mike's a Pittsburgh guy; he's a good guy. He writes about college basketball. Wrote an article. Look, the point when you write an article like this, Mike isn't. It's not the be all and end all. He's got space constraints. The evidence he uses is. Taking a look at the 2015 Final Four playoff teams, the article is designed to be thought provoking, and it's thought provoking. We could pick apart, individual sentences in the article you may or may not like, but the for those who haven't read it, the premise behind the article is that as good a back as Le'Veon Bell has been, and he acknowledges that he has been a steal at 48, maybe the best running back in the game. His premise is that the Steelers would be better off spending the $10 million a year, and that's just a round number, that they would pay to extend Le'Veon Bell somewhere else. And, he says Josh Norman as a free agent corner as an example. Now, Norman's, as you pointed out yesterday, Dave, he's probably going to be franchised or sign an extension. So Josh Norman is just – it's an example. It's not either or. But that's the point. So the premise is this. He's saying, look at running backs. They get hurt all the time. And teams have been successful without great running backs. So do you want to invest that much in the position knowing that he's unlikely to play 16 games? And obviously Le'Veon Bell in his Steeler career has played 16 games one out of his three seasons. you know, you've got D'Angelo Williams in place for next year. You've got a competent guy behind him, maybe in Fitzgerald Toussaint. You can go draft another one if you need be. But you can go get, with $10 million, you can go get what you need, a stud edge rusher, a corner, a safety. So that's the premise. So go ahead, Dave. Take it from there.
Do you introduce me or do you refer to me as a good guy?
It's my co-host. Is that what that's what I use, my co-host.
But when you talk about me to other people.
I use other adjectives as well.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. But they're probably all true, right?
I don't lie about you.
Okay, good. Wait. back to Bell. He did make some good points in that article. And how many times have we talked about the running back position being fungible?
A million.
Okay. However, comma, as I like to say, you're not when you're talking about a guy like Bell, you're not talking about just a guy that you slam up into the middle of the tackles 20, 25 times a game.
Right.
You're talking about a guy that is probably one of the best pass-protecting running backs in the league. You're talking about arguably one of the best pass catchers out of the backfield as well, too. You're talking about a guy that you don't have to line up in the backfield all the time. How many times have we seen him split out wide on third downs, you know, with the four wide receiver kind of look to get mismatches? I think you have to take all of that into account. He is a positive producing player, and quite honestly, it's not like those guys you draft every year. You know,
no, you're not going to go draft the next Le'Veon Bell in this draft.
You know,
if you were picking first, you'd be lucky to draft a Le'Veon Bell.
These premier type kind of running backs, you know, just only come around what, about every 4 or 5 years, maybe right around there. I don't have.
Well, who knows? Todd Gurley, you know, every couple of years you find maybe a guy who might be a Hall of Fame back. And Le'Veon Bell, you know, it's hard for running backs now because just longevity is an issue for running backs. But, you know, great running backs are fewer and further between than they were 20 years ago.
Agreed. Now, it comes into the cost thing here, and I'm not sure if you saw that contract that I drew up. And here are basically the options with him. You sign him to a long-term deal during this offseason after he's, you know, after you're in camp and you know that knee's okay. You would have to think that he's going to want a 4-year extension, a 5-year deal, somewhere in the neighborhood of $40 million or north. My example has $42 million, with roughly 35% of that being fully guaranteed. Now, 35%, really, when you look at all the running back contracts recently around the league, is a little bit low. But you know how the Steelers are, kind of referred to as the cheap ones. I just threw that out as an example. So let's say you were able to get him $42 million. For a 5-year deal with roughly 35% guaranteed, my example would call for him receiving $15.5 million guaranteed, of which $12 million would be a signing bonus, an additional first-year base salary of $3 million, obviously fully guaranteed, and then a fully guaranteed first-year workout bonus of $500,000. All right. If you look at the structure of the way I laid out that contract, and Lord, you can lay these things out 8 million different ways.
Yeah, let's not get too specific about it, but yes.
Right. His cap charge next season would be 5.9, 2017, 7.5. Basically, the life of the contract that I drew up, his cap charge would never exceed $10 million. Now, he obviously wouldn't be a guy that you go to with a restructure, being the position that he plays. And realistically, if you needed to cut him, you could do so after his third year of this new contract, which would be after the 2018 season. The only other option you have for him is let him play out the final year of his deal, and then if you still want him, you put the franchise tag on him, which by then could probably be what, 11 or 12 million at that time.
Yeah, 10.95 this year. It's only going up. Well, actually, it doesn't necessarily only going up, but yeah, it's going to be around that number.
Yeah, it might even be $13 million by the time we get – who knows? You know, there's going to be some backs that probably lose their contracts, backs that get new contracts. I think he's one of the most key ones, him and Matt Forte, I think, are the two to really watch during this offseason here. But with that said, And I've talked about this before when they've used either the transition tag or the franchise tag on other players, and most recently Jason Worlds. Whenever you give a guy a tag for a certain amount, that's how much you're telling him he's worth per season. So if you're expecting to tag Le'Veon Bell after the 2016 season, be prepared to ride that full tag amount for the entire season, whether it be 11, 12, 13 million.
So, Dave, let's just get to the bigger question here. You know, let's say it's a 4-year, $45 million deal or whatever the numbers are. I don't really care because we're guessing on the exact numbers. Are you in favor of it or not?
I am, because he's a player. Plain and simple.
I think the Steelers will extend him. I do. And I think it'll happen this offseason. You know, the numbers, you know, again, I think he'll get roughly $10 million a year. You know, Peterson's getting 12, 12 and a half.
If he gets $10 million a year, then we might have to have a talk here, because I worked this thing out for him to be kind of the second highest paid back above, assuming Marshawn gets cut and assuming Arian Foster gets cut. If you give him something like 8.2, 8.5.
Peterson's making $12 million. If I'm his agent, I'm saying – you know, why are you giving me a $4 million haircut on Adrian Peterson?
Sure, but on the flip side, though, if he does, you know, is he willing to play for $1 million?
I mean, Shady's making eight, right? Eight something?
Right, 8.1, 8.2.
He's way better than Shady.
Right, but I think that's what his market value is. And when you consider that he has...
Well, Shady's market value was $8 million. Somebody traded for him, was paying him $8 million. I think Le'Veon Bell is a significantly better player, so I think his market value is $10 million.
I for one will be surprised if he average yearly value is higher than nine.
Okay, so would you do the deal at 10?
Man, see, I'm not looking at Omar Khan's spreadsheet.
Yeah,
That's not fair.
But it's a great conversation, right? I mean, you agree, it's really interesting stuff.
I guess, you know, people say, well, how are you splitting hairs over $1.5 million per season? Well, that adds up.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, that's exactly, might have been exactly the question I just would have asked you, because you said he is a difference-making type of player. And so it's going to be a really...
Let me tell you, he'd be making more than Antonio Brown is per season at $10 million. How do you think that was sitting
on? Yeah, no, that's, you know, it's a great point. I mean, you're going to have, you know, three guys making double digits all of a sudden if they extend him. Let me ask you this question, Dave. This is something that won't happen. So let me ask you hypothetically. If there's a team out there that views Le'Veon Bell a little bit, say, like the Buffalo Bills did LeSean McCoy, and they want him, and they're willing to extend him. So they're going to say, you know what, we want to trade for that guy, and we're going to have him this year really cheap for $1 million, or whatever the number is, and then we're going to give him a 4-year, $40 million deal. So we got him for the next 5 years. We have the 21st pick in the NFL draft. We will trade you that for him. But remember, in the LeSean deal, the linebacker went back the other way, a former first-round pick, a guy coming off an injury, but a good player. But we will give you, and I'm just making this number up, I don't know which team it is even, we will give you the 21st pick in this year's NFL draft. Would you listen to them?
No, I wouldn't. And on top of that, because look, you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know what you're going to get there with that pick either.
Well, you're going to get somebody significantly cheaper for a period of time. I'm not saying you have to take a running back. You have D'Angelo Williams.
Right, but I'm talking about, you just don't know what, you know, sometimes how these players are going to, you know, at least you've got a proven commodity.
Right, but you have D'Angelo Williams as well.
Yeah, but you got D'Angelo Williams, and also you're not – are you entirely sure you can get a full season out of him?
Oh, who knows? I mean, look, that's, you don't know you're going to get a full season out of him.
Not aware of what you're saying is the running back position so fungible that you could get by with whoever. Okay, I understand you. I understand your premise, but also kind of let me shoot it down on the back end too. Let me say you're the GM of that other team trading for Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
You know, are you going to put the player in that much of control by trading a first round pick for him, not knowing for sure whether or not you're going to be able to?
Yeah,
block
and
him
I don't
up?
Know what the rules are on that. I'd certainly want some kind of security that I'm allowed to. The NFL gives me permission to talk to his agent or something like that. You know, would you be agreeable to this type of deal? Yes, that's a great point. Legit point for sure.
And I
but
mean,
I think
we don't...
you know, if somebody gave me the the Steelers, look, there's no guarantee. I mean, the Steelers can extend Bell. He doesn't obviously have to sign. So they only control him for a year. And I don't know what the rules are going to be, Dave, in terms of the CBA. Is the first round picks, is the fifth year option still in existence?
Yeah, first round picks are come with a fifth year
option. So you're going to get a guy. You're going to get, in fact, your own pick and this guy. You're going to get two guys that you have control of for potentially 5 years, at least for four. And, you know, you don't have to hit on every first round pick, but man, gives you some real power in the draft. You could go draft that tight end and you could draft a running back, or you can draft a tight end and a safety, and you can then, you know, take a running back in the third round or, you know, whatever, knowing you have D'Angelo, knowing you have Fitz Toussaint, see if you can get a running back that you like in the mid rounds and go from there. I just think it's, again, all these things are just, you know, they're just, if you want to call talking about sports intellectual, they're just intellectual exercises. But these are honestly things that for Omar Khan and Kevin Colbert and Mike Tomlin, these are the things that they have to think about. I don't know that this specific issue of their trade is one, but certainly everything we discussed about Le'Veon Bell, that's their job. And as Mike said, it's also their hobby. That's the decision they're going to have to make here over the next 9 months. And it is front and center.
I wouldn't trade him, would you?
Man, if somebody offered me the 21st pick and I looked at the draft and said there are two first-round caliber running backs there, you know, two Todd Gurley types, and I'm just trying to think who's coming out at the running back position. You've got the kid from Alabama. I wouldn't use a first-round pick on him. But if somebody like Leonard Fournette were coming out this year, you have to look at the draft board and see what you think of guys. And so that's why maybe 3 months from now, or, you know, they have a better idea of when that, and that's when that type of trade will be done. You've got all your guys lined up and you say, you know what, we can do that. And I would listen. I would definitely not just hang up the phone reflexively. That's for sure.
Yeah. But you didn't answer the question. Would you eat the hot dog?
I would pay him the $10 million a year and I would make the trade. So I would extend him. But if somebody offered me let me be a little bit greedy here. If somebody offered me a top 15 pick for him, I would make the trade.
Well, you can't sign him, man. You can't sign him
and then
eat all that dead money.
I'm saying I would keep Le'Veon Bell if nobody offers me the trade. I would extend him. If somebody came with the trade idea, I would probably do it if it was a top 15 pick.
Okay.
So I like it both ways.
You know, that's why during those 10, I posted like 10 questions that the Steelers must answer during the offseason immediately, Monday or something like that. Look, David DeCastro, that's a slam dunk. That's getting done. I like the chances of Le'Veon Bell getting done, but I don't think it's a slam dunk, like some might think. Do I hope it happens? Yes. Would I extend him? Yes, but I'm just a basement blogger. So.
All right, let's get on to the other one because we've got a limited time here. And as I said up top, we saw the first of – look, first of all, I think Bill Barnwell's a really – look, I talked about this on my show yesterday. Bill Barnwell's a very good NFL writer. He wrote for Grantland. He's now writing for ESPN.com. He does a good job. He's got insightful stuff. He's analytical. He does his homework. He knows what he's talking about. So that's the background. So I'm not here on an anti-Bill Barnwell crusade. But
I took care of that for you.
Okay. But let me say this. If you're a national writer, you write about national topics, you know all 32 teams. You know every team's running back and quarterback. You know their first, second, and maybe their third wide receiver. You probably know who their left tackle is. You know who their stars on defenses are. But you don't know who their best special teams player is. You probably don't know who, you know, their first linebacker off the bench is. You maybe don't know who the nickelback is. And if you know this for all 32 teams, God bless you, but I'd be surprised if there's anybody out there. There are probably a couple guys out there who have that, but not a lot. And so it's one of the reasons I never have national guys. I always laugh when people in Pittsburgh have national guys on to talk about the Pirates or the Steelers or even the Penguins. It's like, if you don't know the team better than the national guy, you're not doing your job. So, when guys, national guys write articles about the Steelers, Dave and I, you know, largely take them with a grain of salt. Because, you know, this is a team we spend 95% of our time covering and they spend 5% because they get to allocate it to, you know, or whatever, 3%. They got to allocate it to the other 32 teams. So that's the premise behind this. Now, there has been an ongoing crusade in the national media for three or four years now where
longer.
Every offseason, people talk about how the Steelers absolutely butcher the cap, how they're up against it again this year. They're really stuck. They're hamstrung, blah, 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 bullshit. And, you know, if you want the answer to are they hamstrung, just go look at their record. Go get out the fact book, you know, pull it up on Google and look at their record the last 5 years. And two of the years they were 8-8. Okay, maybe, you know, the cap had something to do with that. It's very, very possible. But again, as we've talked about it, that's the downside. And they transition from that great defense to what they hope will be a great defense again someday. Some of that's aging in players, and Woodley didn't pay off, and that was turned out to be a mistake. Cortez Allen hasn't developed. But the point is, the Steelers continue to win. They know the cap is going up every year. They have kicked some money down the road, but they have managed to win in the process and put themselves in positions, and they've been able to do some stuff with street free agents. You know, they were decimated by injuries this year. They have some level of depth. So, you know, I'm rambling, Dave, but it just annoys me. So I kind of went on a tirade on my show yesterday, and that's kind of where the focus was. Just you're going to see one of these every 2 days.
Yeah, and Brandt is the other one that likes to hit. His swing will be coming up pretty soon. Andrew Brandt, right?
Yes.
Is the other one. I expect him to take a swing here now that Barnwell has taken his. Look, you know, he tries to circle things that he thinks are shooting wounded ducks out of the sky.
The other thing is the whole article. Look, he wrote about the positives and he wrote about the negatives. So we didn't hit on the – he did – you know, he listed a bunch of positives.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't do that. And then back, you know, give me a backhand upside the back of the head on your way out the door, you know. And that's, in my opinion, exactly what he did. You know, he talks about Lawrence Timmons, you know, and them kicking the can down the road with Timmons, and here they are now with Timmons having a $15.1 million cap hit with only $8.75 million of that being his base salary. Look, do you think they didn't, you know, they have a plan for this? Yeah, and we've talked about that. That plan is probably what's Bill Barnwell going to say when Timmons signs a 2 or 3 year extension with no new money, a la what Heath Miller and Troy Polamalu did.
Okay, but you know, we have to see that happen. So let's not play.
Right. But I mean, look, what's the worst case scenario? If you cut him, you free up $8.75 million in cap space. Okay, sure, there's dead money attached, but you're also saving money against this year's cap by doing so. Timmons, I will be shocked if Timmons is cut. I will be shocked if things don't play out exactly the way I said they did. He goes on to ramble about the Marquise Pouncey being restructured and Ben Roethlisberger restructures. Look, we talk how many times about the sins of having a franchise quarterback that makes a lot of money on a team that likes to retain, to give contracts, to second contracts to their marquee players. And kicking the can down the road via the bank of Ben is one of those necessary evils. Will they restructure Marquise Pouncey again this year? It's possible, but that will only be after they go to the bank of Cameron Hayward because, of course, he's the newest deal and he's younger. There's less risk involved with doing something like that. I don't really think there's going to be, you know, outside of maybe Ben and Cameron Hayward and you know, maybe Marquise Pouncey. They're not going to look. You're going to save money if you do what I said with Timmons. You got DeCastro coming up for a deal. He's on the books for $8 million cap hit right now. You're going to save money just by giving him a new deal as well. I don't think Barnwell thought all these kind of things.
Yeah, no, he doesn't have a deep understanding of every guy on the roster and their pay.
And then he goes on to say about the restructures. He goes on and says, but that's a necessity because the Steelers are losing all kind of contributors. And then he goes on to name, you know, three members of the secondary in Blake, Gay, and Will Allen as being huge losses. Would Gay be a big loss? Yes. Would Will Allen and Antoine Blake be a big loss? Absolutely not. So, you know, look, did the Steelers go into the 2015 break training camp thinking that Cortez Allen and Cinquez Golson was going to miss, you know, all year? No. No, but because that happened, you have to go elsewhere because of that. I really got it kind of infuriating him talking about the Steelers have no heir apparent in for Kelvin Beecham. Did he even watch Alabama?
You know, yeah, that was. I mean, guy played the whole season. You know, what did he play? the whole season? Or did he play 12? I don't even know. When did Beecham go down?
The Arizona game.
What's that?
Arizona game. The Arizona
fourth,
game.
Fourth, 5th week. So, I mean, you just
have... No, six weeks,
okay, so
right?
So you got to have a guy play 10.5 games. I mean, it's on...
And as I wrote in my, you know, nobody's going to confuse Villanueva with Joe Thomas, but he certainly got better as the season wore on. He certainly proved he can play left tackle in the NFL. And oh yeah, he's cheap for the next 2 years. I thought Bill liked cheap. So let's say you don't bring back Kelvin Beecham, aren't able to resign him. In my opinion, they're in okay shape there. He also went on to list Will Johnson as a guy that they might lose and acts. You know, kind of insinuates that that's going to be a big deal. Hello, does he know who Roosevelt Nix is, who we talked about, you know, kind of early on in the show? And I could go on. You know, here's the other thing that kind of got me. Talked about Sean Swisham. What does he say? He says they can save $4 million by cutting Heath Miller, $1.8 million by releasing Sean Swisham, and $4.4 million by designating Cortez Allen as a post-June 1st release. That also leaves them without three starters at three positions. Did he not see what Chris Boswell did? Does he even know who Chris Boswell is? You know, and look, they haven't had Cortez for 2 seasons now. Heath Miller, would it be somewhat of a loss? Yes, but I think as we talked several minutes ago about, you know, we kind of expect Heath to be back. So I just thought, look, I mean, I know people will read that and people will take it as the gospel truth. And my job is, and your job is to say that's not the gospel truth. If anybody wants to read my full rant on that on SteelersDepot.com, they can. It's still on the front page. And I think your rant is available podcasting on ESPN 970 website as well.
Absolutely. And it's on my Facebook page. We'll get into that. Okay, we got to wrap things up. We'll be back on Friday. Look, I know we're running a little bit long here, but I know a lot of people have had a chance to read this article, 10 to Ben. And my buddy Brady McCullough did a story on the Steelers Super Bowl teams of Super Bowl 10 and Super Bowl 40 and where they are in their lives. And it's 2:40 right now. Nobody's going to hear this until after the fact. Brady's going on CNN. This story has blown up and has been a national story. And unfortunately, the part that has blown up that everybody is talking about is Antoine Randall talking about being banged up physically at age 36. Maybe if he had a choice again, he would have played baseball rather than football. And then saying football might not exist 20 to 25 years from now. Brady wrote everything accurately. Look, there's no questioning what Brady's article. It's fantastic. As for the article, read the rest of the article because there are features on 14 or 15 players, and read the starting thing about Franco Harris visiting Gordon Gravel in the hospital, about how Andy Russell got his first chance to play because the guy swallowed his tongue, and then the next outside linebacker up broke his ankle on the next play. Then Andy Russell held the job for, you know, 12 years. There's fascinating stuff in there if you're a Steeler fan. This Randall L thing has taken over because everybody wants to talk about concussions in the game of football and CTE, and that's very important stuff. But this is a really good piece of journalism. I had Brady on my show yesterday. You can see on my Facebook page, David Todd Show, you can hear the interview. It's about 15 minutes. We talked about a lot of stuff, a lot of different players that he talked to, not just the Randall L thing. And I can't recommend the article enough, but – if you're kind of glazing over it because the national media is talking about what Antoine Randall said, John, point you back to the article and read it because there's so much other great stuff there for Steeler fans.
And before we apologize for running along, but to wrap up the show, I want to give shout-outs to some donations. Simon Thorpe, Taylor Carpenter, Jeff Crump, Martin Oates, Theodore Pratt, Michael DeSaints, Victor March, Nicholas Chambers, Patrick Brophy, Sean Kirchhoffer, Dustin Huber. I know maybe read some of these before. Steve English, Frank Carl. People, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your donation. That's what makes this show go. That's what allows us to run a little bit long sometimes as well, too. You can follow me on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. Follow David on Twitter, at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to chime in on anything we talked about today, if you want to donate, go to SteelersDepot.com. Look for the donate button. Alex Cazora will be in Mobile, Alabama this weekend, starting to cover the Senior Bowl, so be on the lookout for his updates as well. Make sure you're listening to David Todd and ESPN 970. Once again, we apologize for running long today, but we hope you enjoyed it. David?
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.